to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got the one and only...
We have...
Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, dear Mike. How are you, my buddy?
Welcome,
nice
Bobby.
To see you.
So we just keep switching up Bobbies, don't we?
That's right.
No,
just
we got Bobby Osiski,
forever.
Bobby Summerfield, and one of the Bobbies.
I just want to call myself Bobby today.
Just two Bob.
We're all a little Bobby.
I'm Bobby Gershon.
Bobby, it's good to see you.
You too, my bud. Nice to see you all.
And next to Bobby, we've got the one and only Scott Gershon.
Thank you. Scott. Just call me Bobby.
Scott, I'm glad you came in. I thought
confusion.
You were going to do helicopters and things like that.
He's doing a helicopter right now.
I was. You know, I, by the way, I'm now done with Season of the Witch. It's done. Comes out January 7th. To be honest, after being on a dub stage, I let better, brighter, and more agile people run to all over Arizona. I just went, you guys, I'll see you on the other side.
You made that executive decision.
Yeah, you know.
I got you. And then next to Scott... The long lost Diego Stucco.
Hey, Mike. Diego,
it's good to be back, guys.
Welcome back. Now, you've been all over the place. You did your.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, you did Italy.
Yes.
You did your performance.
Playing trees.
Playing trees.
Yeah, no.
Well, it's good. It's good to have you back.
Thanks.
Next to Diego, we've got Brandon Birdside. Brandon.
What's up, Mike?
Brandon's working on some really cool stuff. We got a little sneak peek early in the afternoon. Me and Jeremy did. It's kind of cool. Some of it.
Some of it. I worked on some crap the rest of the day.
And finally, we've got the one and only, I've been here 96 times, Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
But 97 is really the charm.
Is it really 96?
This is show 96, guys.
Wow.
96.
We were young and good looking.
And you're 95, and Bobby's 3.
I'm actually 95.5.
95.5.
That's right. Yeah, I've been here 3 times.
This is Bobby's 12.
It's good to have this much of the gang back, though.
I know.
Yeah, it's the core.
It's good. It's good to have everybody back.
The coasters.
Well, hey, listen, it's good to see everybody. Today we have a lot of really cool things we're going to talk about. A few things we're going to cover. We're going to talk about groove. Everybody, nice. We're going to get your groove on. And we've got some groove masters here. Bobby. Bobby's a groove master.
I am?
Yeah.
Matt, can he dance?
He can dance. Bobby can dance. And Diego? Diego can pull a groove out of any living plant.
Organic groove.
And finally,
the organic
side. Rob Arbiter is the grooviest white guy I know. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, but he's not white.
On the outside, on the outside. Reverse Oreo.
Only on the outside.
The other thing we're going to talk a little bit about, a few things. We're going to talk a little bit about gain and gain structure, and I know you guys are all looking forward to that. You know, the comments you made earlier.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Break me up before you go.
We're going to talk about that fast.
But
before we get into that, I just want to talk a little bit about Pro Tools 9. I know we covered that in the last podcast, but since the last podcast, it seems like Pro Tools 9 is really having an impact in the industry, and you hear a lot of things about it. And I got into a really interesting discussion with a friend of mine, and we were talking about software packages and Pro Tools 9. And he was saying that what's going to happen is you're going to see Pro Tools 9, there's some software, obviously, that are going to be affected negatively by Pro Tools 9 coming out. But he said there's going to be other software that actually it's going to help out because you're going to be doing, you know.
Do you want to be specific?
Yeah. Like, for instance, people that work in Ableton Live, and they like the arrangement, and they like producing in Ableton. And then they want to mix in Pro Tools, in regular Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. And since you have a higher track count now that you can in Pro Tools 9, and this is a friend of mine who was talking, he was saying that they would really complement each other because he had never... He works.
And you're talking compared to LE rather than HD.
Exactly. He was talking about Pro Tools 9. And so he was saying, you know what? It really makes it now really attractive for me to continue working with Ableton, but also to pick up Pro Tools 9 that I can use my own interface like I could before and take advantage of some of those mixing features in the desk that they have mm-hmm. in Pro Tools 9. And I thought that made a lot of sense. Yeah. I think,
but I can hardly see, you know, Pro Tools 9 beating the sales of Ableton Live.
No, I'm not saying beating. I'm saying it's going to sell. You know, you're going to see a lot of people who use.
Yeah.
You know, but what does it do better for you? I mean, you can use Ableton Live with LE.
Yeah, but if the fact that you can use your own interface in LE, you can't use
or
your
without.
Own.
Well,
the question is, can you use other programs now with the Pro Tools hardware? Where before you were limited to 8 in and 8 out,
yeah.
The question, if you have a bigger system,
yes.
Could you now use, you know, Ableton, Logic, any of the other programs?
With the core drivers, I believe.
Nuendo, with the actual Pro Tools hardware.
By the way, is it true that when you use the core audio, you have a less number of tracks? You don't get to the maximum number
of
tracks.
Yeah, I think you have 32 I.O. rather than 64.
It's 48.
Is it 48?
Yeah, the maximum. So you should get less.
Well, no, with the voicing, though, it's 90. It's 96 on Pro Tools 9.
No, outputs. Outs and ins.
Oh, I see. Outs and ins. I don't know.
No, I was actually talking about the number of tracks.
Oh,
stereo
of tracks?
And mono together, yeah.
Simultaneous.
It's 96. You can 96. Do 96.
But that's less than an HD.
Right, but that's more than an LE.
Yeah, for sure.
So the question is, what does the core audio drivers for the Pro Tools hardware.
But I'm not talking about the other way around, too. I'm talking about if you have a big live setup, you have your own interfaces, and you want to start using Pro Tools 9, let's say, to do some of the ticket.
Oh, and Pro Tools will address however many I.O. that you have drivers for, right?
Right, but now you'll be able to. It just seems like they complement each other, and vice versa. If you have your Pro Tools 9 system running on your, let's say, Motu card, and you want to try live because of live, you know, with the pattern-based arrangement and everything like that, it's just, I think they're going to complement each other.
The question on an HD system, I know the bus count is doubled. Has the track count increased beyond 192?
Don't know.
Yeah. Because I saw something that said 512, yeah. And I'm like, there's more voices than tracks.
Right.
So it's like, no. There's more tracks than voices. Or it's like 192 voices, but does that necessarily mean you can go beyond the 192 tracks?
We've always been able to have more tracks than voices, so that makes sense that it would still be that way.
Right.
But it's always been that way.
But can you break the 192 track limit? And I've seen one ad said yes, and then one article said no.
And I wonder why they're doing it in the first place.
You use up to 192 tracks. I mean, you go up to that limit. I didn't even know there was such a limit.
I got 1,000 tracks.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was such a limit.
192 is where you basically...
Right.
Wow.
And not only that, but the you start running out of RTAS.
Yeah.
So, you know, because every time you do it, you open up an RTAS plugin and you use a voice.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not sure, but, getting back to what we were talking about is how... there's going to be some software that are going to really complement each other really well, like a Live and a Pro Tools 9.
Actually, the way I think it's going to work is it just means that you can run, if you had a machine before that was for Ableton, and it is pronounced Ableton, and we have confirmed that with many Germans.
Oh, nice.
It is definitely 100% Ableton. We can
so
put that to
you're
bed.
Enabled?
So if you're enabled in Ableton.
It's like Moog.
So if you're using Ableton, it means
Ableton.
You can basically whatever computer you're currently running, Digital Performer or Ableton or any other workstation, you can now run Pro Tools on that same hardware. So it's not that all of a sudden, if you have a Pro Tools machine, Ableton's going to be better on it. It's more that you can run Pro Tools on your machine that was already running.
Yeah, I can see the benefit of using it on a laptop.
I think the point that he was making is you're just going to, you know, it's not a threat to certain software, and it's a threat to other software. For instance,
well, it's a threat to all the other workstations like Cubase and Nuendo. DP and Logic.
Although Logic, the thing about Logic is most people that I know who have Logic.
Hate it.
They love it.
They use it for all the. They use it for everything but recording and the, you know.
I heard with Pro Tools 9 you can actually import the bugs from Logic.
Wow!
Really cool. It's bug compatible
through a key command, by the way.
Right.
So in the middle of it.
Right now, Bill Burgess is having heartburn.
Yes, yes.
He knows we have.
Hi, Bill.
Love.
We love you, but we can't. We can help.
Most of us love it. Because with all their like a thousand variations of hardware.
Oh yeah,
they're like, oh, it's great.
They're gonna love it. But I found that really fascinating. That yeah, you're just gonna see. It's gonna reverberate, and it's gonna.
So here's the question: has anybody here played with Pro Tools 9 or are using it?
I'm very close to it.
Because I want to know, great, what's the bugs?
Oh, you know what? It's not that it's overtly buggy, but you have to remember, think back to when Cubase was new and Digital Performer was new and Logic was new. And well, Logic still seems like it's new when it comes to bugs. Think about when these programs were new and when new hardware would come out, there would be tons of compatibility problems and tons of timing issues and latency issues. And if you think about it, Pro Tools 9 in one version is trying to address every single piece of hardware under the sun, and there's a lot of them.
Exactly.
So it's natural that there's going to be a lot of these bugs.
Coming out?
You know what? It's kind of – it's just a little bit silly to even ask because it's obvious they're going to have problems in the beginning. It's obvious the Pro Tools hardware is going to work fine in the beginning, which is what any high-end users are going to be using anyway. It's going to take time for it to get figured out, but the important thing is it is going to get figured out. They don't tend to just – give up on stuff and leave it buggy. I mean,
oh, no. The reason
it's
why
it's going to be solid, but it would be insane. It's like being the first guy to go to Windows 7 or OS 11 or whatever.
Right.
And you just don't want to be that guy.
Right. I don't want to be that guy.
The reason is a lot of times they go, hey, something's coming out. And then, like, 2-3 weeks later, and the fix! And
the first fix is like, but you can't be surprised by that. I mean, you know,
no,
it's
I'm not
coming.
Surprised. I just wanted to know.
I would say if they say it's coming out in November, then say by March I'll be using it.
Yeah.
Seriously, though.
Yeah.
And what's the hurry if you have stuff that's working now?
I'll just stay with Nuendo and not try.
Well, you know what?
There is that, too.
That's a good question, though. How do you think this is going to affect Nuendo? Because
I think it's going to hurt it
negatively.
I think that's going to be.
Because I think Logic and Performer have very strong user bases that are very. I mean, they're not going anywhere.
Right.
Nuendo, which is, you know, back and forth. And Cubase, you know, again, I don't, you know, it depends what the user base is.
The user base is huge, just not in our hometown, so it doesn't seem so big.
Yeah.
But it's huge around the world.
Massive. It's a shame, though, because they're an unguided company by the looks of it. They're like Cubase and Nuendo and dumb names. They should just consolidate it and say, okay, it's a good pro package. You know, it's just
They did that at one point, they were thinking, but then all of a sudden, Nuendo wasn't selling as well, but Cubase could sell better. So do you go with the music program or do you go with the pro audio program?
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to consolidate, though, now with Pro Tools. I mean,
I hope they do. I really do. They should.
There's no reason not to.
Such a lot of work as well, engineering. Why have a
Well, and it's very expensive promoting more than one brand.
Exactly.
But the other thing is, theoretically, Nuendo is a post product and Cubase is a music product, and they should be completely different, unrelated, disconnected marketing efforts, and they're not. That's a mistake that has happened from Steinberg and through them being sold numerous times. That's always been handled wrong, and it's being handled wrong now.
I remember even the unions were teaching Pro Tools and Nuendo.
Right.
Nuendo, where everyone was going, here it is, Nuendo's coming up, and they were teaching it, and it was like Final Cut and Avid. And now all of you know there was like those two, Yamaha took them over, and now it's just Pro Tools, and Nuendo is out in the dust, 100 miles behind.
But at least it's there, you know. At least they didn't opcode it, you know. At least they didn't.
Sure.
Well, now I think Cubase is going to take a hit because I mean the reason I went with Cubase when I was originally getting into this because no hardware involved.
Right.
Now,
right.
If Pro Tools didn't have hardware involved back then, I would have gone Pro Tools.
Right. No, the new Pro Tools is definitely going to impact
the functionality.
All the
other workstations. Though, once you get used to using Cubase, you go to Pro Tools, you're like,
you know what? All you have to do
folders.
Is see the way people work, and you realize that. It doesn't matter. I mean, people get used to whatever they get used to, and they don't care. If everybody was actually forced to learn every workstation top to bottom and really learn it inside and out, Cubase would be the only one left. There's no question.
Yeah.
But that'll never, ever, ever happen because everybody likes what they know.
Yeah, of course. I agree.
Sorry, Bill.
I was waiting for it.
This episode was brought to you by Steinberg. Hey, you know what? Hey, at least I paid the price. I spent lots and lots of time learning how much I don't like Logic.
That is
twice. I read the manual
best
cover to cover.
Critic ever. Seriously.
I read the manual cover to cover numerous times.
Yep. I've migrated twice. Almost 3 years later, I thought, oh, they fixed them all. Whoa.
It's used a guitar thing on it.
You know the acronym for Logic?
What?
Lots of ghastly indirect crap.
Wow.
Wow. I've got ones for Cubase as well, though.
I think Apple will get over it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they really care.
Well, anyhow, it's going to be interesting as this keeps reverberating through the industry just to see what happens, and with not only software but with the hardware too. Like you said, Motu's loving it because now all their interfaces become fair game. And
I mean, because is there another interface company other than like M Audio and Pro Tools that makes a huge amount of variations? It seems like Motu is that company. Well, you find them at the back of every magazine.
RME.
PreSonus.
RME makes
it. But RME's only for PC.
No.
Oh, they make Mac stuff now?
Yeah.
I use a lot of their stuff on a Mac.
Fireface, all those have been around.
Yeah. I know there's Apogee for the high end.
Yeah. Oh, the new one is phenomenal.
Lynx used to make a great card.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? There's other companies out there in the fringes that are going to be jumping into it, and
it's great for the hardware companies and bad for the software companies.
Yeah. So anyhow, let's move on. But I just found that pretty interesting. Another thing I wanted to talk about is I've been using a program. Thomas Wendt. Everybody knows Thomas. He's our good friend. He happens to be he does PR. Works with Propellerhead and works with Celemony. Anyhow. He hooked me up with Reason 5. Have you guys tried Reason 5 yet?
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys tried Reason 5? I just want to give you a quick...
It sounds like Thomas hasn't been doing his job.
I just want to give you...
I know he listens to the podcast, so I figured
Reason's
give him
one of my
group.
Favorite programs, actually. I love Reason, it.
No, now you're just sucking up.
No, yeah, it is.
Thomas,
it is cool.
Thomas hooked me up with Reason 5, and I started playing with it, and I loved it so much that I went in and bought Reason and Record 1.5, because I figured if I'm going to use it, I want to buy it so that I can get the upgrades and stay current with it. And let me tell you, Reason 5 with Record 1.5 is such an awesome little program sequencing recording universe. I mean, you don't have to stray from that at all. It's a full blown DAW in its own way, because you can't use plugins. You got to stay within the whole Propellerhead's universe, but it can take you from point A to point B, meaning from recording, sequencing, all the way to finishing with its amazing plugins. It sounds great, and I installed it on my laptop, and it's just a really great place to kind of have an all-in-one solution. And the only reason why I wanted to bring it up is because last week we were talking about tools, and we were talking about jumping in the proper tools. And if you just want to have a good time, you just want to get in there and make music, and you want to learn, you can't go wrong with Reason and 1.5 Record, because it's a great place. You hit the tab, you get all the patching, you learn signal flow. It looks like an SSL board, and
looks like a Mackie, actually.
No, the Record looks like an SSL board.
Oh, the SSL, right. Oh, the Record side of it, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Yeah, inside Reason, it has a little Mackie board. But I just wanted to pass that along because it was really an awesome it really performed awesome on my little laptop that I took with me when I went to Dallas and stuff.
Propellerheads has always done incredibly creative stuff. The other thing about Propellerheads is it is incredible how unbuggy their stuff is.
Yeah.
Their stuff is so solid. They've had releases in the past where, you know, you go up and you check on the website 6 months later, there's no maintenance update. There's just none needed. It just works.
And it does work.
And it sounds really good. It's got a really good character, Reason has. I use it in rewire mode with the door, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. That's how I use it, too.
Yes.
And the synths and the new Kong drum. It really is. I just want to throw a recommendation.
Is it still more electronica style, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty much.
It's a funny story. Okay. A client called me. Funny side story, kind of related to this. A client called me to do a job. I said okay. I gave him a bid. And they called me back about an hour and a half later. They said, "Listen, we got this person down the street. He's got this new software called Reason, and they can do it for half price. Have you got that same software? And can you do it for half price?" I said, "Yeah, I've had Reason for about 100 years, but no, I can't do it for half price. Get them to do it." So they did. And then they called. Oh no, they didn't call me back. But I called them back a couple of weeks later. I said, "How did everything go?" And what I actually heard was that the client asked, they liked the track, but now they wanted to put some strings on it. And that was a bit of the end of it. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, a great dance box.
It's a great dance box, and it's a.
I love clients, by the way, who judge your value as a composer by the software price of the toys you use. Yes. That's an awesome way to pick a composer.
I certainly love the question. Do you have reason?
Yeah. Do you have reason?
Like, let me know a secret.
Well, I mean, you figure, though, it probably just impressed the bejeebies out of them when they saw, you know, that virtual rack and all those cords that, you know how Reason looks like and stuff.
I miss the Fairlife for that.
You know, I know these clients, and my guess is they never saw Reason. They just heard the buzzword, and that was enough.
I think the buzzword was half price.
Yeah.
Yes. It's hard to be that half.
That's the truth.
I'm sure it is.
It's the truth.
But yeah, I just had to give that a plug, especially, you know, I want to thank Thomas for hooking me up, but it was so good. And usually, you know, with a lot of things, working with the podcast, you know, we get to try out a lot of really cool software and things like that. And I find that the ones that I like and the ones that I'll endorse are the ones that I buy, because it's, you know, you want to stay up to date and you want to, you know, be a current user. And it just it was phenomenal.
It's a nice thing you mentioned that for people wanting to get into audio and learn more in this very virtual world, they won't really get much chance to learn how to patch stuff in and how sounds are generated and built. There's a good user base. A lot of people, when you hit the tab key, of course, the rack turns around and little animated chords wobble all over the place. But you can plug in virtual. You can make that rack do all sorts of things and do some kind of complicated stuff. And it's really good for people that want to learn more about sound, you know, patching. It's a good program to learn on.
Yeah, it's actually really educational.
You know what I also like is the Moog Modular from Arturia.
Very lovely.
That's smoking. Just sweet. Mm-hmm.
That is smoking.
I mean, you can get some really bizarre things.
Nasty little sounds.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to get shocks out of my mind.
All right. Well, hey, listen. I wanted to, before we get into Groove, I wanted to talk a little bit about gain. And I wanted to talk a little bit about gain structure and
I thought you said gay.
Nah.
I'm leaving.
It's really about gains and short selling.
Ah, I see.
Okay.
We had a
audio economics.
Cut your losses, keep your gain.
Well, I thought he meant the detergent.
Man. Welcome back, Mark.
You see where everybody's heads at, you know?
Great. I think we're going to talk about those now.
Anybody know what a gain brain is?
Talk about that.
Well, this actually got brought up because of the podcast where we had the mastering engineer from Oasis, and he was talking about using less compression and more gain structure and controlling your gain.
Have you heard of Oasis record lately, by the way? It's so loud that I'm sure he's a good guy to ask.
What?
The Oasis records?
Oh, no, he's with Oasis mastering.
Not the band. Just testing.
Liam Gallagher has a new project, though. It's basically Oasis without Noel. Yeah. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard it.
I haven't heard it yet either.
Yeah,
I gotta check it out.
Mike's like, "What about gain?"
Sorry, Mike.
We got the attention span of a gnat here, you know.
No, that's okay. That was Gene Grimaldi from Oasis, who's the mastering engineer. Anyway.
Anywho.
Yeah.
By the way, I would like to say that I did not divert this conversation this time.
No, you did not.
I'm just sitting here quietly.
You didn't clarify.
You said Oasis. I thought you meant the band Oasis. Who else would I? I've never heard of Oasis.
Well, you weren't here for the Bleeding podcast.
Was I bleeding? Not.
It was back in 1970.
Leave me alone. I'm hungry.
We'll talk about that later.
You and Diego.
Yeah.
So anyhow, getting back to gain structure, and he was talking about how he manages gain structure as opposed to heavy compression for his mastering. And so they wanted to expand on that a little bit, and being as Gene is not here right now, and I should have emailed him.
Interesting.
But I wanted to open it to you guys about how would you use gain control as opposed to compressing to manage your mix? Anybody have any ideas or thoughts on the process?
You should clarify gain control first for people so everybody knows what you're talking about.
The controlling of gain.
That involves using volume.
Volume, you know, there's a lot of different ways. You know, when that's one of the things. When you talk about gain and volume, it's amazing how people sometimes, and I see these mixes, especially when I'm like training somebody who makes, they don't quite know how to get more volume out of things. They don't know how to make things louder. Sometimes they'll raise the overall volume when actually only they really only need to get in there and EQ to make something cut. For instance, I had at a post place that I worked, one of the engineers that was there used to go get the compressor that's in Pro Tools, and you know the standard compressor that they have in Pro Tools, mm-hmm. you can raise the gain like 20 dB. I mean, you just raise it up and it's ugly. It's just it goes from 0 to 100, you know? And he would do that all the time when he ever needed any more gain. And actually, I actually lifted that technique because it's a good way to get gain when you have stuff that's really, really low. But it's just ugly, ugly, ugly. It's just way too much, and he didn't know that you didn't need to do that. Sometimes if you want to get a little bit more volume, you know, you can do it with EQ. You can actually do it by lowering things around it.
But you know what? This thing about gain, because I'm just trying to imagine how you would use riding the fader, I guess, to get more gain in specific parts of the music. But if you are doing that, you're either killing the natural dynamics of the music. Or what?
I mean, I don't think he was talking about doing that, and the question doesn't totally make sense.
Well, yeah, I know, but actually, more than anything else,
not just throwing a compressor or a limiter on something, because even that processor doing nothing affects the sound. And he was talking about keeping it as pristine as possible.
Yeah, but if you want to capture transients, I don't care how good you are with a fader, you're not going to be able to do that.
Well, no, and that's the thing too. I think what I wanted to do is I just wanted to open up the whole conversation on volume and gain in general, because you bring up a good point, because there's different types of gain. There's like transients.
But the biggest problem that I've seen with gain is straight on everybody's sessions I get, especially in Pro Tools, is I'll watch each of the plugins light up in red.
Yeah.
And everyone's slamming them, and the gain structure, talking about unity gain or lack of it, it's all over the place because I can hear Pro Tools all the time. It gets, I think, has a nasty, crunchy, very unpleasant sound when you overdrive it. And it's so easy to overdrive it. And a lot of times I've seen people have plugin chains that they're just beating the crap out of it, and it's not like one of those great old analog devices where you hit it hard, and it's really kind of neat-sounding.
Right. You know what I would say? That is probably the number one problem that people mastering in Pro Tools have, is that they're just blowing out the plugins with way too much level. The trick with mastering or doing just about anything in Pro Tools is at every single step of the way, every time you leave a plugin and go into the next plugin, the sound's being put on the buses. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be overdriving the buses, you know, the digital buses, unnecessarily ever. A lot of times if we're doing mastering, I'll put together very complex chains that take up a whole bunch of auxes in Pro Tools. And there's a thing called the TL Master Meter, I think it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it comes with Pro Tools for free now. I'll insert those so I can actually look and see what the bus is doing between plugins sometimes. It's very important to make sure that every step of the way you're not overdriving your plugins, or if you are, that you know what kind of a sound that's causing. There are some plugins that actually overdrive well, like the Waves and Eve stuff, actually can distort things and put them on a bus in a way that's kind of pleasing for certain kinds of music. But the trick is to not just trust that everything's legal because it looks okay on the screen.
Right.
You know, if you start to see plugins clipping red, you're doing something wrong with the gain structure. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make in mastering in Pro Tools is they don't realize the very first step you have to do, if the song is mixed really loud, the first thing you have to do is turn it down. Turn down the source so that you have some headroom to play with.
Well, you know, that's a point that I wanted to bring up, too. Is
bring the gain back, you know, through plugins.
And you know, one of the things that I do and I require on everyone who works for me is, because I break it into categories for sound design, that I send everything through an aux. But before the aux, there's a VCA. Hmm. So automatically, and I say, I don't want you to touch the VCA, I don't want you to automate it, because a lot of times what I'll do is I'll just go right into it, drop everything down to minus 10, almost straight away. And just because it's so easy, you keep adding the sound, you want it bigger, you want to do this, you want it beefy, you want to rock the room, next thing you know, you're in the red. So then you go in and you sit there and say, okay, that thing's fine, but now I'm kind of crunchy. Okay, go into everything. Grab those VCAs, bring them down to minus 10, then kind of start your mastering pass.
Yeah, because I bet with effects, man, you guys layer hundreds of sounds together, and the combination of all that energy is just going to raise the volume, you know, when you throw in all your hits and stuff like that.
And we found, we did some tests, several of them, and we're curious to see with Pro Tools 9 and, was it Heat? Mm-hmm. We found that if you take smaller tracks and sum them through an external mixer, it sounds way better than doing it all inside the box. And we've been, and it's not like, well, if it's kind of subtle, every time everybody could pick it out. Yeah. It wasn't, it was like, and that's what we had found when we go through the Euphonics, that, yeah, everyone went, there it is, right there.
I've just recently finished building, I told Rob knows about it, I've built myself a little summing amplifier, which is just basically a discrete bunch of Burr Browns onto my bus, and it's got high voltage rails and everything like that. I sum all my dig on there, straight up my apertures, straight into that, and it's just night and day.
Yeah.
Really is night and day, especially for Pro Tools. Pro Tools does not sum well at all.
But you know,
I don't like any of the sound of it.
Yeah, and it's not just Pro Tools. I mean, back in the day, I was working with Teddy Riley, and we did, I did Guy's last tour, and we had, off his synth racks, we had 32 channels coming out, and instead of they were going to sum through line mixers, we didn't sum through line mixers. We actually came out, and he had a monitor board, and we ran everything into that monitor board, and then from the monitor board, they sent 8 pairs to the front of house, and it sounded great. I mean, it just the more we kept it open and all the way to the final, the final desk, it was punchy. Everything, we separated from the basses and the drums and the drum machines that he had and the samples. It just kept it really clear, as opposed to taking a stereo out, to the front of house, or even 2 stereo outs.
Right.
And it just seems like if you keep things separated, if you keep the gain from having to come down to small little pipes, if you keep the pipes open until you get to the big desk, it sounded great. And the same way as in your DAWs, and I can only imagine, like, you with all the different tracks that you're running and all the, I mean, when you do a big fight sequence or a big action sequence where you have planes and cars and explosions and things like that, I mean.
Well, we just got finished doing a battle with swords. What's interesting with swords, Swords has a really bad 3K, like rip your head, 5K.
Yeah.
But when you record it right and it has air, it doesn't hurt. But when you kind of lose that,
right,
it just becomes just bloody obnoxious, brittle, and God forbid you should put any kind of plug-in on it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, and it's talking about gain.
Yeah.
There are certain high transient sounds that if you don't gain correctly, just really get ratty.
Well, I think the point of all this is when you're working with gain and your volume, it's more than just pushing up your fader. You really got to think of what you're doing. You really got to think of, maybe sometimes you can have more by taking things away. And addition through subtraction.
To clarify, though, you're talking different things now. Gain,
right,
or perceived volume. So, yes. I mean, that's a big difference.
That's true. And
I mean, so well, two different. So we're kind of talking bananas and Chinese teacups.
But one thing that I learned a little bit, actually strange enough, a thing later in my career, not that late, but when I originally did music, we were using LA-2As, 1176s and all that. And I really didn't – I used compressors in a very institutional way.
Right.
Now, I don't know, in the last 2 decades,
I've
started using them in a much more creative way. Because then you can have these really slow compressors that kind of beef up the sound, that don't take away the transients, but that just add color. Or you just want to shave a little of those transients off, but still not contain it.
Yeah, actually, with the transient designers, those are pretty cool plugins to use.
I mean, I get all these compressors that all very distinct sounds,
right,
and they just do these little containment, whether it's frequency-based containment, whether it's transient, whether
right,
it's slow. You can have multiples together. You can put a compressor and a limiter together. And it's just really
kidding.
And whether it's music, too. I mean, forget about design. I mean, getting those drums, getting the John Bonham drums, and getting things to pop a little bit, and those the guitars to sound beefy, and the vote. I mean,
yes,
you know.
Well, I agree.
You know, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to have Gene back, and we're gonna talk a little bit about how he uses gain structures and his mastering. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about that because everything, even perceived volume and gain, and the whole thing. Because to me, a lot of people try to solve a lot of problems with the plugins, with the outboard gear, things like that, and sometimes it can be simple as turning things down.
He was talking very much about having nothing unnecessary in the chain.
Yeah.
And that, you know, makes a lot of sense because anything's going to add color.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. That's a good place to take a break. And so we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to talk groove.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking game. Now we're going to talk groove. How's that?
Nice.
Game is groove.
Great. Alliteration.
So at the AA show on the way up, I drove up there. It was a six-hour drive from L.A.
And did you get your groove on?
And what I did is I put my iPod on, and I just kind of left it in shuffle mode and just started listening to songs that I hadn't heard in a long time from everybody from Earth, Wind & Fire to Michael Jackson. And just saw just this amazing difference in all these different bands and all these different sounds. And I always came back to the ones that had a groove. You know, you can't beat like Earth, Wind, and Fire and, you know. The
so you do head dancing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It just had such a great appeal. And I get people that send me demos asking for my opinion on a lot of things. And a lot of the demos that I get, the one thing that's missing from a lot of these recordings is groove. So I wanted to talk to you guys.
Because they don't play them. That's why.
Well, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to talk. Yeah. And because all you guys, you know, you have your own groove in your own way. And I wanted to talk a little bit about groove. And what is groove and tips and techniques for groove and how you get it and how you can develop it and what to listen for in groove. So right off the bat, when we talk groove, Rob, what do you think? How would you define groove?
My answer is going to be a little on the depressing side, actually. I mean, groove is sort of a hard-to-describe innate feel that music has, and there are a lot of different kinds of groove. But the thing I think you're going to find depressing, my opinion, is that you absolutely are either born with it or not, and you cannot learn it, and it cannot be taught.
End discussion. Done.
You cannot learn it if you don't have it.
Yeah. Thank you. And,
and that was pretty much it.
He just said what I was about to say.
You lost my entire
life.
You're
born with it, you don't have it.
I mean, I actually don't like the joke about the funky white boy and all this other kind of stuff, because I've heard that my whole life, and I've actually met a whole bunch of other white boys who were, you know, everybody said they're the funkiest white boy they know, and usually they're not. But my entire life since I was a little kid was completely based on groove. I mean, when I was like 6 months old,
he was strong.
I was feeling groove, and that's the reason my parents started me on music lessons when I was three. But it was just in my blood from the beginning, and I know lots of people who was in their blood from the beginning, but there's no way to learn it. You either feel it or not. And luckily, most people do feel it to a certain extent.
Well, I think a lot of people can feel it, but a lot of people can't do it.
They can't do it. But still, if you feel it – actually, I'll say this. If you can feel it, you can learn to do it. That is something you can learn. It's either – the concept of groove is either in you or not. If you feel it, you can learn to do it because you know when you're doing it, right? Because you feel it.
You got to dance either outside or inside because that's the nature of it. Yeah.
But, you know, to me, like as a kid, I knew what my favorite groove was. I knew I needed the backbeat to be a little bit late. I should have been born in Detroit. I wasn't because that's the Detroit sound. But I knew as a kid I liked songs that had the 2 and 4 a little bit laid back. And I hated songs. I hate when bands are rushing. I can't stand when I hear vocals on a rock song that are ahead of the beat. It just drives me absolutely nuts. Because it's wrong. And the reason I know it's wrong is because when you do it, you know, laid back a little more, it sounds better. So that means, you know, being rushing is wrong.
Right.
And yet every rock band you listen to, with very few exceptions, they're rushing, and I just think it's horrible. I happen to be super sensitive to grooves.
Don't like generalizing that.
No. I happen to be really, really, really sensitive to grooves. So it's something that hits me all the time, and it drives me nuts if I hear somebody rushing something. But basically, you know if you have groove or not. And, you know, it's groove can also be a very sort of hazy term because there are lots of kinds of grooves. Right. I mean, somebody rushing has a groove. It's just a groove that's rushing.
Right.
You know, which
so
I
is it a Russian groove?
It's a Russian groove. But I think, you know, rhythm is kind of in your bones. It's kind of like if you're born able to carry a tune or not. If you're really tone deaf, you're not going to ever learn to carry a tune.
But also some musical cultures, some Latin and African cultures really work hard in that backbeat. They really kind of slow it back and
they move it back into it. And there are some that rush it. I mean, there are some Indian beats where it's kind of rushed and it works great. Yeah. There are African and
South American, Brazilian.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Beats where things are supposed to be rushed, but they feel really good rushed.
I think you said an interesting point there, though, when you were talking.
You said rush?
Let's talk about it then.
I've already been brutal to love
right.
Like,
right.
Russian groove is an example of something that has no groove whatsoever.
But you did say something about if you can feel it, you can learn to do it.
You can learn to create it.
And I think there's a lot of tools out there and a lot of the software with groove templates and things like that that can help people find their inner groove.
Yes, there is, but you know what? People start to rely on that stuff way too much, and you know, like somebody will do a song and the sequencer will have a setting called, you know, New Jack Swing or hip hop or whatever. And so rather than do what you think feels good, you hit the quantize button and it destroys whatever groove you actually played it with and puts some factory groove on it, which is just sterile and horrible.
I've always hated that because I love the backbeat. I like things leaning back a little bit. Every time you're on a sequencer, you go, okay, why don't I, boop, gone. And then you can't get it back, and you just got to play it all over again.
Well, unless you use Cubase, in which case you can get it back.
But you know what?
you can always remove the quantize at any point.
Anytime.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Groove is something, like you said, groove can be, it's not
groove
just a slow two and four.
Yes.
You know, you can have, you know, different grooves, and quite frankly, there's a lot of music that doesn't have a slow two and four that's pretty awesome. You know?
Absolutely.
Well, it's polyrhythms that happen.
No, I'm saying
music that's
for soul music and R&B, the backbeat being laid is good. But I mean, there's 6/8 grooves. There's all kinds of different grooves.
I think one thing with grooves, speaking specifically to electronic music and quantization, is sometimes, yes, you're recording with a synthesizer into a DAW. You're not using, you know, real live instruments. But instead of quantizing that, you know, if you just play your part, you know, learn to play your part.
Right.
Like, play along with the song like everyone used to have to.
Right.
People don't do that anymore. They can go, that's that one little loop. I'm going to cut that and I'm going to loop it 20 times.
Right.
You know, play your part. So every time, it's slightly different. And it's those little spaces that so everything fits
in. So my
in.
Problem is I hated the 80s. I absolutely despised it. When I was in music school,
you're evil.
And everything was like, and I'm just like, oh, God.
It was a very 16th note kind of time.
Yes, and it was all, you know, Devo and the Hope. I just was like, you know, give me something, you know.
Yeah, I know.
You know what?
But you were saying give me Rush.
No, but you know what? If you want to look at like Joe Zawinul, who had like a lot of amazing Latin rhythms happening, and they were doing fusion jazz over that, and some really great stuff in that way, and you just sit there and, you know, your head's just bobbing. I mean, I think if you look at the psychology of groove, though, a lot of it has to do with heartbeat, and has to do with multiples of heartbeat, and then if you start speeding it up, your heartbeat gets a little faster and it gets a little more exciting.
Right.
And there's that fine line between, because people have body sync. There is a body clock that everybody's at. And I think that, you know, you slow it down and you speed it up.
So that's why 120 was the disco tempo.
Well,
But there's one thing, for example, you know, when you talk about groove, you don't talk just about loops. You also talk about the way you perform a longer piece of music. So you might have your own groove that can be applied to any part you play. But in general, as Brendan was saying, whatever you play, it's going to sound more real because you're putting something, if you have groove, of course. But at the same time, if you start getting used to the idea of playing music it can be electronic or acoustic, you develop this sense of groove because you're putting something human into these boxes, into these machines. And so whatever you play, even if you play a 3 minute piece of music, or I mean, I have this weird example because when I was doing Music from a Tree live in Italy, I was playing with a DJ, and the DJ has the records, and they just keep marching at the same speed when they don't drift up and down. But whatever I was doing was pretty much free. I was improvising with the tree on the beats, and I was also improvising with the bowing things without really having to be too much in sync. I was in groove. I was really getting into it.
Right.
Because there's these sounds that they need to make sense in a certain way, and there is a groove in it. And so it's really a matter of...
It's kind of the difference between being a we've talked about this before, between being a musician and an editor.
Yeah.
Because a DJ is basically an editor in that context.
Yeah.
And, you know, at some point, obviously, I personally feel musicianship is much more important. DJs would have nothing to play if it wasn't for musicians.
Right, yeah.
You know, so you should, if you are a musician and you want to consider yourself a musician, even if you're not good at it at first, you should try to just play the stuff yourself, unquantized, and feel the groove.
Yeah.
If you can feel the groove enough to appreciate it in other people's music, it means you can learn to appreciate it in your own
music.
But
what I'm saying is, for example, if you're not a drummer, you say, okay, I don't have any groove. But that's not true. You can be playing piano and have a very specific groove. You can play the fiddle, whatever you want to play.
Absolutely.
And it can be super slow, but what... I mean, groove, it's not just, you know, two and four. There's a lot of things in between.
No, absolutely. So, it's just a feel.
And you know what's also, because music doesn't always have to be dancey, happy.
Of course.
One thing I love is that when you look at really the master musicians who can create dissonance with rhythm, not just with tone, like Billie Holiday used to sit there and go way behind the beat, and you're like, ah, she's off, and then resolve it right into it, all of a sudden between pitch and rhythm, and she was just masterful in how she played with it. Another thing is, as we talk about music, what people don't realize is picture editing. I can tell if I've got a good picture editor because it's got a groove.
Yep.
And I've been complimented so many times by, I remember early Oliver Stone films, I would be hitting the cuts. And this wonderful picture cutter named David Brenner, he'd go, oh my God, you're masterful. It's got such great rhythm. I go, thank you. You're making the cuts. A lot of these guys are making cuts to click tracks. And they're doing subsets, and there's a rhythm to the scene, so you could start doing the cuts faster, slow, and they're psychologically, by the way they cut, creating a groove.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, and, that's so true.
And if you hit the sounds and the music on certain notes, all of a sudden, you know, my favorite example when I was in a little bit of film school is The Shining. And Jack Nicholson. What he was doing, and again, it's brilliant if you look at the case study. The people they're talking, because people talk in a rhythm. There's a groove to everybody's dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
And what happens is, so, you know, hey, Jack, what do you think of this? Blah, 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 blah. And everybody goes, well, what he does is he totally disrupts the groove.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't realize it. So instead of having a conversation, he speaks like this, they speak like that. And when you hear two people talk, they start actually getting into the same groove.
Right.
Well, Jack will take that conversation, totally change the groove of the dialogue to make it feel really uncomfortable, but do it in a subtle way that nobody goes, well, that was
it's like
that's awkward.
A trip-hop version of a dialogue, basically.
Yes, yeah, so you think a car crashing, because the audience wants to get into a pace, whether it's music, whether it's anything, and when you start disrupting that pace, even with orchestral music.
No, big time.
You know, when people start slowing and speeding and playing with the rhythms, or jazz.
I'll tell you, you know, one of the great things about groove, and when I was listening to my iPod and I was listening to all these bands that were grooving, I noticed the mix. A lot of these really great records had great mixes, and it's because you could hear everything. There was room for everything by the snare kind of laying
just
a little bit.
Just talented people doing it. Yeah. Now we've got a bunch of editors pressing buttons.
And just making room for everything. I mean, when you hear like a really good song that has a great groove and a good mix, it's like you hear the snare. You hear everything just kind of has its own place. It's not all landing on top of each other.
Well, mainly because they were really good musicians who were the only ones who were able to afford really good engineers.
Right. And also, this connects with the discussion we just had about gain. The way you play it, I mean, you auto-gain yourself.
Right.
Certain elements, they start to have a groove because of the level, because of the balances between these elements.
Right.
Because if you look at the of a drum set, it doesn't look like anything musical. It's just it makes noises, okay? But if you take a great drummer,
yeah,
it's incredible because it's mixing in real time, but with his performance, what he does.
But even if you're not the zillion-dollar studio musician, even if you're just working on your own stuff, if you start playing around with where the snare is going to land and start playing around with different things, you'll see you start making room for everything. Everything can start
or remove the snare. Just try to remove
dynamics. I mean, but even when I was over at Berkeley in school, and we did an interesting thing because I was a recording engineer. And we had one drum set, and people can change their drums out, but mostly everyone used the same drum set. And what was fascinating was I would use 10 drummers in a day. And then occasionally one guy, it's the drum set, you go, okay, I got my 421s, we mic and everything, and the RE20 and the 112. So we do all that, and all of a sudden the guy sits there and goes, okay. And like, wow. Where'd we get those drums? All of a sudden, he's hitting it right, he's grooving on it right, and it just comes alive.
Yeah, of course.
And the drums are like, wow, the three other guys are just, just didn't have
like
that.
Like any instrument that comes alive. Right. Everybody says, oh, he's great guitar sound. It's like, dude's fingers, that's what it is.
And in the
hands.
One thing that was really cool is when you start listening to groove, there's a lot of cool ways people get a groove. For instance, one technique that I heard, and I heard it a lot, was, you always hang back the two and hang back the four, right? On one song, the drummer was pushing the bass a little bit on the top end of the beat. So that when the snare finally landed on the back end of the beat, you thought the Grand Canyon was in the middle. It just had such a great, it really made that snare seem like it was way on the backside of the beat, and it wasn't. It was because the bass drum kind of just was pushing it along just a little bit. So you went boom, gah, and it was just it was really cool. And you start, I don't know, man. If just go get some old groove albums and start listening. When you start seeing all these things and you start listening to all these things, you really can. For me, it got me excited to want to go back and just try to mess around with my own music, trying to put some of these techniques in. And
one of the keys, because everybody's using some sort of workstation to create music these days, and for a long time, mostly because of all the Stevie stuff I was doing, I was always trying to develop ways to use software where you didn't have to stare at the screen all the time. And part of the problem and part of what kills a lot of people's natural grooves and natural creativity is that you do spend so much time staring at the screen, grabbing the mouse, looking for the keyboard, whatever. Yeah. And the best thing you can possibly do is to work with your eyes closed. Don't – I mean, it's a shame
click
if you have to
stare.
Click
track or no click track?
Click track's fine.
Okay.
But the thing is, because a good musician can play to a click track and still have their own feel on top of it.
Right.
But a lot of times click track is necessary for a whole bunch of other reasons. But the thing about groove is you have to just trust your ears. It doesn't matter that a little grid on a screen says you're on the beat. Yeah. Who cares?
That's true.
You can put a certificate in with your album for the audience saying, well, the music may be crap, but trust us, we were right on the beat. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's just that matters is the emotional response that it's going to give you or someone else.
But if you
else.
Think about it, it's because of systems like Pro Tools that gave us the impression that by aligning everything, everything starts to be fine. Because before you didn't really have a chance to see on tape if the hits were right on the beat. So you just trusted yourself.
Yeah.
And right also, now you look at the waveforms and you start to feel, well, what if I do this?
You just have to get in the mindset, I'm sure you do, and any serious musician does. The waveform's there to show you that you actually recorded something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter where it says the beat is if it doesn't sound
like
it.
Yeah, when you do records and tape, you didn't care.
You know something, just use your ears. When I came up with that Russian Dragon about 15 years ago, I used to have tests with people. And say, they just say like this, and I was pretty much accurate, very much more than a lot, because you basically get to hear. You start to hear. You pan something left and right, you can hear it in time.
And for those who don't know, the Russian Dragon, I have one, if anyone needs one, that was an awesome little box. And it would show you, we used to use it in the dance remix days because you'd have to sync up like multiple snares and multiple kicks. And it just had little LEDs that would show you whether one snare was Russian or Dragon against the other snare. We used to use it constantly. It's funny. I used to see them in every single studio around town. Everybody had them. And I always thought it was this big, complicated piece of gear. And then I finally bought one. And it's a one rack space thing. Module, but it's only like an inch deep.
Oh, sorry.
It was hilarious, and it wasn't cheap. I remember buying it and getting the box open and thinking, oh, my God, it's like there's nothing in this thing. It literally is like an inch deep.
Interesting thing, just before you go off a groove, because you need to finish, but I'll just say one quick thing from the audio side of things. And I did a lot of experimenting about 18, 20 years ago when sequences became very popular on performance, playing and quantizing and the whole thing. And I found that a quantized track that has really good dynamics, so if the musician plays really well with great dynamics, a drummer, for example, but the bat, if you're trying to recreate that with a computer, if you use samples and you use a sample source that has great dynamic range and the computer allows you to put velocities in, yet it's quantized hard to 16th, let's just say, it feels and sounds better than if it doesn't have good velocities.
Absolutely.
So time, sorry, we're talking about groove.
Right.
Groove is definitely feel. You touched on dynamics.
But you're talking about accents because you do accents with
it. But there is a combination of essential timing that makes a thing feel like it should be where it's played, and the way the person, whoever it is playing whatever instrument, bass, guitar, piano, whatever instrument, has a dynamic ability to hit it hard, will make that pocket, the feel of that, come together better. And that's what you get. That is what is inherently developed from a performing musician. They have maybe an innate birth-given feel groove, but right. when they learn and they practice and they got good dexterity, say, for example, a drummer, they know how to play around and they hit things in a nice feeling way that will make their performance sound like your guy's drummer come yeah. alive. Well, the drums came alive. Well, he just hit it right. Well, he hit it right, but it is a bit of everything. So groove is essential to understand that, I think, anyway. I must have spent 4 months on it, really bugging around. And I also found out, just coincidentally, that Trevor Horn did a very similar test. But he came up to the same conclusion, that time could be absolutely horribly straight quantized, but if the velocities are great, it will still feel good.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
which is really interesting. And the last thing I'll add, from an engineer's point of view, as a mixer, I didn't always get the best drummers in the studio. I was a mixer, so I got what was on tape. But sometimes you had the ability to adjust the feel of a drummer's performance with use of different kinds of compression. So what you could do is you could adjust attack or decay on a compressor to make the snare, or let's talk about a snare, but I used to use bass as well,
right.
to actually change the timing of certain things. So if the guy's playing ahead, or if he's very, you know, nervous kind of in the studio, yeah. nervous energy, you change the dynamics or put a slower compressor on there with a slow release, a slow attack on it, and a marginally quick release. It's kind of a nice way of doing it. Another way to do it is to sidechain it with a 3 millisecond DDL and trigger the compressor. So it only compresses the later half of the thing. So it actually makes it feel late.
That's a great idea.
A lot of people used to put
a little back in the days when you had to engineers.
People used to put a little delay on the snare just to give it a little that more of that back.
Yeah, but I used to delay the sidechain to the compressor because the compressor used to go, oh. So I used to actually slow it real back. So by the time the guy hit the snare, it actually emphasized the second half of it, which was actually... Yeah. Wow.
That's brilliant. That's
cool. It's a cool trick. Yeah.
It's a cool trick.
Fun, wow. Fun.
So you know what? These kind of tricks, if you still use them today, you'll be surprised by the amount of creative stuff you can
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Because they're really
lateral. It's funny because it used to be... I mean, they weren't even tricks. They were just...
You engineer, yeah, well... Get the drums into shape. I'll be back in 3 hours. Make it groove. Right. Get going. He's a bit up on top. Fix it. There's a couple of spots that you're like, okay, yeah, that's what I did.
And it's also,
secret weapons.
And you're also associated with groove is, groove, because it has to do with transients. Then when you start putting lots of sounds together, you're talking about why things were so clean,
right.
is to guard the groove. Yeah. When you start putting a lot of crap in there, and other sounds start masking other frequencies, then all of a sudden it is hitting right, but the frequency that's hitting is slightly masked, and now it feels behind in a not pleasant way.
You can challenge yourself, your ears. It's not whether it's in time or out of time, but take a snare drum sample, of course, if you guys are mostly using computers. Take a snare drum sample, put it on whatever it is, 2 and 4, let's just say, and take another snare drum sample. That's a different tonality. So like a real organic snare, or maybe, you know, a dark snare, or whatever you want. Or even a synthetic snare. And then place them on top of each other and try and line them up identical. So the transient, you know, obviously two different samples are quite different, but line them up as close as you can.
and then play them, and then start offsetting the one of the snares to the other one, you'll start to find there's a sweet spot where it goes. It actually starts to feel better.
Oh, yeah.
It's silly, but I'm not talking about a flab. I'm not talking really wide. I'm talking like samples. You start shooting 10 samples, 8 samples, 12, 15, 100 samples. You start to notice it's comb filtering, really, but it starts to get a nice sound as a nice meld. And that's really another key part of a really good record that you're listening to that feels and grooves really well. Right. And you can hear everything. It's because, one, they've played it well, and the engineer knew what he was doing or she was doing, but... It's also just like a lucky combination that comes with 25 years of practice in an instrument.
Yeah. And also when you're designing a sound, whether it's musical or sound effects based, a lot of times I'll put the sub, a sub hit, a quarter frame early. Because by the time the low wave hits you and the high transient hits you,
that's smart.
A lot of times if you go, I'm going to make the transients exact, but not all frequencies translate correctly.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I'm sitting there and I say, yeah, you know what, it just doesn't have the punch. And I'll start playing with sub-hits and moving it in against the main. And all of a sudden I find, you know, an eighth to a quarter frame ahead, all of a sudden, I don't know why, it just feels more open.
Because you feel it.
Because the wave has to hit you.
But the low frequency is a long wave.
Yeah.
And the short frequency is
a short wave.
So the low frequency, by the time it started off already, the peak of it is supposed to be getting to your ear at the same time.
Especially if you're 30, 60, 100 feet back in the theater.
Well, all the sounds travel the same speed.
Yeah.
But the low frequency, the waveform is peaking on the low frequency at the same time as the high one is.
Yes.
So it joins there.
Do all frequencies travel at the same speed?
But what's the propagable
range?
Yes, but the thing is.
Yeah, they do.
But there's a sub, there's an excursion of a sub moving forward and a tweeter happen at the exact same time. It doesn't.
Hmm.
Because the propagation of a speaker, like an 18 inch sub, has to move slower to get that sound out compared to a mid-range or tweeter, which is a faster excursion rate.
Right. They're time-aligned speakers. The drive.
When you're talking about a sub, a dedicated sub, you know, it's not all nicely a near field.
Right. No, but there are speakers. They're called time-aligned speakers, but they actually, and a lot of speakers do, they actually put the horn driver over the low frequency driver to timeline it, so you do get all the sound at the same time. Because that's really the problem. That's why coaxial speakers are the best the speakers that have horns inside the low frequencies. Because the best. They're actually very good for timeline stuff. So it's more accurate. So you don't get that cloudy sort of junk.
That conversation had great groove between you two, Randy.
And one more Geek Fest thing. If you ever want to know, Tomok Groove, if you ever want to know what people are thinking, listen to their footsteps. It tells you everything about what's going on in their head.
In Italy, we say how they drive
their
car.
If you, there are some people, like you hear a woman with high heels that looks like she's got a walnut in her purse. Or there's a ka-doom, 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 ka-doom. And you can automatically, just by listening to somebody, psychologically go, I know a lot what's going on.
And what's the groove of those people who drag their feet like...
But it does.
It feels so out of groove.
I know it sounds really geeky because a sound effects guy.
I know what you mean.
There's right Foley and there's wrong Foley.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing a musician.
Right.
And to get a Foley artist, like at one point they walk up and there's a hesitation and it's just a feel. It's very hard to describe, but when you hear a footstep that you're reproducing from an actor and they get it right, you just go, yes. You just captured that performance sonically.
That is, you know what? That's an awesome example because literally in Foley artists have their own groove.
And there's really good ones and there's really not good ones.
And you can tell, that's why, like, if you throw a microphone out and you want to do your own Foley, I guarantee you, you will be able to hear that is crappy Foley because you're not walking with the confidence and with the groove that a real seasoned Foley artist
and the emotion.
With. Yeah.
Yeah, but the same thing completely applies to music because sometimes, and this is applies also to the fact that you can learn groove, you have to feel comfortable in your own performance. You have to feel comfortable in moving your body.
Right.
Because if you're playing live and if you don't want to move, your music is not going to sound the same.
Right.
So the moment when you reach this, let's say, maturity or, you know, confidence in
the way you play. It's practice.
It's physical, yeah.
It is physical, yeah. It's
Let's get physical.
Now, that song had a groove.
I just, you know, I really want to encourage people to start listening to music, start listening for the groove. And groove is not just in R&B, although there's some great R&B grooves. I mean, I was listening to, you know, electronica. You know, Daft Punk has some really great grooves.
Awesome
in their
grooves.
You know, and it's all over. Even, believe it or not, even country. You know, you can hear some really cool. It's oh, so not true.
The raw meter.
But we'll go.
It's got something. I don't know that it's groove.
Even for those who are
playing bluegrass, there's a lot of groove.
Even
yeah, that's true.
You know, right. Progressive rock, there's some groove in there too. But
sure, there is, Mike.
I don't want to say anything about singing.
But it's so freaking fast that nobody notices.
It's got rhythm. I don't know if that's groove.
Well, I just want to encourage people, you know, to mess around and if you can feel it, you know, really start to work on it. And if you're working on a, you know, on a DAW and you're doing some editing, try, you know, moving things around and try exploring that. And and if you're a musician and you're playing, do what Rob said, you know, just close your eyes and just
yeah, don't worry about what the computer says about your performance. That really doesn't count. It's not going to buy your album.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? And quite frankly, too, you know, you can use the best of both worlds. You can play it, and then if you can
Bob Dylan didn't have pitch and didn't have rhythm, but boy, did he sell.
And you know what could be a trick to start getting into the groove? For example, you pick an album or you pick a song that you like, you put it on your system, and you just play along, either from your keyboard or from whatever instrument you're playing. And then you just create your own version.
Right.
But you just start to play along with this thing.
Yeah, play along with CDs, yeah.
And it can be useful also when you play with electronic stuff. Start with something acoustic. Maybe you just played on the table.
Right.
And then you replicate that performance with – you can, you know, align those beats if you want. But the beginning of the performance was real. That would feel different.
Yeah, so you build to a loop rather than a tempo, a locked tempo. Yeah.
Right.
That's cool. And you know what? I'm gonna try doing that compressor trick with Reason, though, because Reason has compressors in there. And,
yeah, they got great compressors.
And it'll be pretty cool. See? Best of both worlds. All right. Well, hey, thanks, guys, for all weighing in on groove. I just think it's really important. I think, you know, you can always make your song better if you have a
little
more
groove. Should we give
him a 16th? Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go, I want to...
That's the opposite of a groove.
That's not what to listen to.
Okay, here we go.
Nice.
You just broke my groove. Anyhow, before we go, Rob, are you working on anything interesting that you can talk about, you want to talk about, you want to groove about?
What I want to groove about? Let me think. The moment we're actually putting together a bid and doing some preliminary work for a project that could be a massive thing next year, and I don't want to talk about it yet, but I've been spending a lot of time. You know, it's funny, when you deal with clients, I normally deal with clients that I've worked with for a long time, but every now and then, you know, there's a new relationship, and we just happen to have this new client come out of the woodwork, and we're bidding against two other companies for this job, and we've made it through the first couple rounds, and it's going very well. But it's interesting, the process of, especially on a huge project, having to win people over, gain their trust, because you have to do it quick enough that you get the gig. You know, you don't have a year to cultivate it. So that whole dance of giving them confidence, showing them what you've done, because they don't know you from Adam. You know, you got to figure out what to play them, what to show them. And I mean, we have – my company's been around for 20 years. We have a lot of stuff to choose from. But it's been a very interesting little dance figuring out how to win them over. And it's been going great, and they're starting to know a lot about us. But I'll be able to talk about that more in the future. It's a little bit sort of like starting over for us, though. It's like building a relationship from zero.
Cool.
That's been interesting.
Tell me if you've got a lot of groove.
This one is going to have a lot of groove.
Right. Brandon, what about you?
Same thing as last week. Working on the same project I can't mention yet. But it's very cool. Lots of cool action and fun... fun things to sound design and compose music to. So
awesome.
Very fun.
Diego.
So, as a follow-up to the live of Music from a Tree, I'm working with the same people on a musical track, which is going to be dance piece of music or something like that, based on tree sounds only. So
wow.
Yeah, we're working on these things. We just started, and it should be out in for Christmas. They want to do a DVD with pictures and videos and stuff. They planted the tree that I played. They put a tag. This tree was played by Diego. I was like, okay, you guys can. I can't believe it.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome.
It's insane.
It's Daddy, insane. I want to see the tree.
Yeah. Yeah. No, by the way, there was a guy that wrote on YouTube that his 3 years old son is replicating the replicating the movements on a toy that looks like a tree. I thought it was the cutest thing ever.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. And besides that, I have some other stuff, but I'll tell you more in the future. All pretty right. soon, though. Yeah.
And do you have more videos from that that performance?
I posted something on my Facebook page. There's two videos. The one where I'm picking the tree,
yeah,
which is
cool.
in Italian, but I'm not saying that much either, so you can watch it anyway.
Really,
I'm saying this one. This is the one. And there's another video. Basically, I'm rehearsing, putting together the set that I was using live, because everything has been done live, but I needed to create the channel strips and everything.
Right.
So there's this video that shows the idea behind creating the introduction of this show, because pretty much the rest of the show was live. I mean, I thought I was going to use loops combined with the DJ, but we didn't really quite lock when we were doing it. So I ended up just playing all the time, bowing and hitting it.
Nice.
Wow. I was exhausted. I was really planning to do a little bit of performance, a little bit of processing, because I thought it was cool. You know, with Ableton Live, I had all these cool things set. But then I realized that when I was looping, after 30 seconds, the record was a different tempo. I was losing the groove, basically, and it was bothering me. People didn't really notice because there was so much excitement about it. But to me, as a musician, it made a difference. So I just stopped the looping thing, and I started playing, performing, improvising along with it. It was an experience. It was definitely something that you learn by the way you're doing it.
How long was the set? It was like half
4 hours.
4 hours?
The first night, it was half an hour. It was more like a presentation. We were inside the Galleria Vittorio Emanuele, which is the historical galleria in Milan.
Right.
And that was a short performance. It was pretty cool. I also liked better the way it started and everything. The night after, which was the actual performance, a DJ set. I mean, the DJ just spins record forever and ever.
He doesn't get tired.
Right. I mean, I was just being killed by the volume, which was so loud. I mean, the DJ had the speakers right here. And I was thinking, how can you not die from such sound pressure? And also, there was a moment when I was just fighting for volume and I gave up. I just, you know, I was tired anyway, but he was pushing the record so much and I had no headroom for anything.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I could scream into the I was using contact mics anyway, because otherwise it would have been a
torture. Catching fire.
No, seriously, it was like
at the end, were you just banging your head against?
Right. No, but it was definitely interesting, and yeah.
4 hours, though.
No, I played for an hour and a half straight, then I did half an hour pause, and then an hour, and then 20 minutes at the end. I had I went to sleep.
So musicians, like an athlete, have to train.
I totally felt like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel that kind of pain when I play my things, I mean, other instruments, but the tree is big.
Yeah.
So you have to move around and you have to make in a way that people can see what you're doing. I had the camera just pointing to what I was doing, and then it was projected on this. It was funny because we were using because it was sponsored by National Geographic. So we had the footage of the National Geographic. Sometimes you see a monkey and me on the same. And so you hear, with the tree, and those were the moments I said, yes, I like that.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
That was pretty awesome. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Scott.
Next 2 weeks, I think I'm going to perfect the art of silence.
Oh.
I just finished a project, and
for you.
Yeah. I was just like, on the ash on the chair, you know. It's spent some time recouping. And just kind of go on the down low. But I'm also looking to play in. I got a little music studio as well. And like I said, I've been really getting back into my guitar and been playing every day now.
Oh, cool.
And I'm just experimenting and just playing at like 1,000 ideas, and just want to be more free and just no clients, no deadlines, just seeing just learning, experimenting.
Nice.
Yeah it's great. Cool.
And most likely you end up using stuff in films anyway.
Yeah,
when you find something cool. You know?
It does, because that's what we used to all do before we did this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We spent time experimenting, and I'm probably going to spend most of the rest of the year just kind of teaching myself new things and experimenting, and I just want to stop doing what I know works and try to find some new tricks.
That's a good approach.
So, yeah.
Are you going to be in your bay more often?
I'll be between both studios.
Nice. So we can come and shoot a Spaces segment in your bay?
Yeah, come over.
Nice. Because Jeremy wants to see your bay, too. I've told him about it. It's pretty awesome. Bobby.
His bay? Is that his studio?
What is my bay? We should call it the lair or the cave.
Lair or cave.
Oh, the one
studio.
I was confused. I'm sorry. I'm away from the microphone. Hello. Good evening. What did you ask me? Oh, what am I doing?
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, well, exactly.
What did you have for dinner?
Yes.
Fucking apples.
I'm starting to do, what am I doing? I'm actually just finishing off a disco project, four track disco project. Actually, thanks to Rob, I called him up and said, Rob,
disco was dead.
I know, I thought so too. Okay. Matter of fact, I hit my knuckle today. I've been also bashing the drums, doing the tracks and this thing. But Rob hooked me up with Nate Watts, which is essentially...
Ooh, which is groove.
That is groove personified.
Yeah, because I'm doing the, you know, old school style stuff. I'm doing, you know, like Rose Royce sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Pocket stuff. He played Kyle, the guitar player, also from Stevie Wonder's band. Came over and played guitar. Also had a nice pocket. And everything's live on it, except for...
Who played drums?
I am now.
Nice.
I don't know about that so much.
Hey, you can't help but play in the groove with those guys.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, it can't go too wrong. And that's what I'm doing right now. It's just a little small project to get out the way soon. Then I'm going back to doing my sample library, and then Rob Williams is coming back into town, and I'm doing a record with him.
Another nice. Song.
Yeah, so cool.
Yes.
So
cool.
Nothing much other than... not eating. I'll tell you quickly, I'm on this 3-day cleanse. If anybody thinks of doing a cleanse, it's actually a good one. You eat apples and drink water only for 3 days. I'm nearly through the first day and I hate everyone.
I thought you were farther than that. You're just the first day.
I just want to see like those fast motion camera, you know, that speed it up and they'd be like, hi, I feel really good.
Wow.
And what'd you do, Mikey?
Let's see. Working on editing the spaces. We're going to be shooting a few more of those, and I'm actually having a blast with the iPad and some amazing programs that are out there. I just found this cool one for granular synthesis.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Curtis.
That thing's great.
Awesome.
So now, when you take your iPad, do you plug it into a DAW? I mean, how do you?
You can record in a DAW.
Hey, did you try the Moog filter?
I have that one. Yeah,
that's pretty awesome.
That one's fun.
Yeah.
I get them. They're so inexpensive. It's just I get them all because I just enjoy playing with them. And the new the Korg, the MKS-20, that. Phenomenal. There's just so many good software programs that are coming out.
And there's an interface, MIDI interface for it, is there something?
Well, you can, if you have the camera connection kit, you can, the USB, you can plug in a generic
keyboard.
USB interface, and it'll recognize it depending on
And what's the latency like? Is it any good?
I don't know. I haven't tried it. I'm still just using it just in and of itself. But there's some phenomenal stuff. People are just so creative in their programming.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
amazing.
Some really good ways to make noise and make music and things like that. I mean, it's just someday I'll have to list a ton of them off. But there's just so many good pieces of software, and I think eventually, if you're a musician, it's going to become just your toolkit. You're going to get it. You know, you will get it, Rob.
So what? So you put Pro Tools on it yet?
Well, you have Pro Tools controllers, but that's all. But you know what? That's coming. It is coming. You know, they're going to be doing some pretty cool stuff, especially now that iOS 4.2 is going to drop.
When does it come
out? Probably tomorrow, actually. That's what they're saying. There's going to be some exciting things. So it's you know, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jazz Mutant and Lemur.
I heard today it's dead.
Yeah. Lemur is dead. They're selling them out because basically Lemur used to cost $2,000.
Yeah.
and it was essentially an iPad. And now you can do the same thing.
It's bigger though, right? It's bigger than an iPad.
It's you know what? It's not that much bigger. It is bigger, but not that much.
Yeah, it looks
more.
Bigger, but the actual surface
is this really?
Yeah, it's pretty
close. It's a shame for those guys.
I mean, they had some cool – I played with it at a couple of trade shows. I mean, the velocity and things of that nature was really cool, the way you could wrap – you
I
could
like
do your fader throws, and it just wasn't linear. It was – you know, it had velocity to it. Right. So, like, you could do a velocity move on your fader throw, and if it was, you know, whether it's controlling, you know, a filter or your volume or whatever, it was really, really unique. Yeah. But now you can do that all on your iPad. So,
Wow.
So anyhow, well, hey, if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also catch us on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/audionowcast. So before we go, I want to thank Jeremy for helping us out. He's doing a great job. Jeremy's taking over, kind of producing the show and editing and mixing all the shows. Nice. So we got to thank him. And guys, this is 96. 97 is just right around the corner.
We've got to get to 100 before the end of the year.
No, 100 is probably the first show of the new year. So that's where we're going. Nice. Some good things are planned for 100.
Also, check out Apple on the website tomorrow. Oh, this is going to be out by then.
It was really great.
Announcement tomorrow,
yeah, I know. 7 a.m.
What announcement? Do we know?
No.
No, no one does.
Maybe they got to buy Cubase. That'd be fantastic.
Nice.
All right. Hey, I will say really quick before
we go. The new iPad with a camera?
The thing about one thing about the Pro Tools 9, I know I'm talking about Pro Tools 9 a lot, but it's affecting even like hardware purchases and things like that, and I can tell you how. For the longest time, I was looking at getting a new MacBook, and I was thinking about going to the Air because I like smaller and better. But now that Pro Tools is out, the 17-inch makes a lot more sense for me because I get all the real estate that I need and the faster processing. It means I can do a lot more mixing and things like that. It's just amazing how this one program is really affecting a lot of different things.
Even Mac hardware. Loves it. Wow, 12-core means something now.
Yeah, well, I bet Avid loves it also. So
yeah.
Anyhow, we got to go because some people have to eat. So from myself and all the guys,
I'm not one of the sum, unfortunately.
Listening, yes, it wasn't Bobby. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.